Welcome to The Cooler Ring, a podcast for manufacturing marketers brought to you by Cooler Partners. My name is Jeff White, and joining me today is Carmen Perry. Carmen, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. I managed even to sneak in a drink of water there in the last second. I was feeling like it was counting down as I knew you were going to be handing me the mic. I'm like, oh no, this is
seasoned pro at the timing you are now.
Yeah, no, something like that. Yeah. It was more seasoned, I suppose, if I didn't actually talk about it, but whatever. but no, it's great to be recording another episode with you, Jeff. And I'm, you know, today's show, yes, it's kind of standard or somewhat often in the space of manufacturing, we encounter companies when people are like, yeah, really? Like, that exists? Like, because it's often manufacturing something that's a component of something else, and you don't often just think about it or what have you. But this is a bit different, because this is like, I mean, you know intellectually that there's somebody out there making this and building these things, but you just assume you're never going to talk to them or something. I don't know what it is, but it's just, so anyway, it's just a really fun category, and really interested to see where today's conversation leads.
Yeah, me as well. And shout out to our producer, Rich, for continuing to find us interesting guests in industries that we have never actually had an opportunity to speak with somebody in.
Exactly.
Yeah. So joining us today is Jay Aguiar. Jay is the Global Vice President of Business Development and Marketing at Chance Rides, and they make roller coasters, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. Definitely it's a very interesting industry, to say the least.
Why don't you start by introducing our audience a little bit more to that industry? Because I'm sure you all make something more than just roller coasters.
Yes.
You know, there's, so talk to us about it a little bit. Tell us about Chance.
Absolutely. First, I would like to say Chance as a company, next year actually is going to be our 65th anniversary, right? We have been part of what is called the amusement industry. The origin of the company goes all the way to 1961 with actually a very surprising product, perhaps for you guys. The company started with a replica of the C.P. Huntington train. You might recall that back in the late 1800s, C.P. Huntington was a popular engine number two, which is the one that made popular. It's still actually in Sacramento, in California, inside of a museum. So the owner created the company, doing a replica of the C.P. Huntington train. It's what is called a miniature train. If you have been to a zoo or an amusement park, you might have your kids or your grandkids actually getting on that mini train. Over time, the company, we acquire another company with the name of Herschel. Herschel used to be the company doing carousels back in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And now we have been doing carousels for a very long period of time. Iconic pieces that we have done, if you go to Universal in Orlando or Universal Beijing or Universal in Singapore, we actually made those carousels. Another product that we do are people movers. If you have been to one of the Disney islands, if you go to Castaway, you go to the cruise, you can take the cruise somewhere in Florida, and they take you to the island and for moving the people from the cruise ship to the island and back to the ship, they usually use our products. That's another product we do. And then we do also roller coasters. You have been to American Dream outside of New York City. That mall has a family coaster from us. Go to Kentucky Kingdom. They do have one of the thrill coasters from Chance. And the last product that we started doing was observation wheels, like the one that you see in Niagara Falls or perhaps in Seattle. We have done seven observation wheels in this part of the world. So, obviously dealing with different clients/customers is quite interesting, different demographics, different behaviors when it comes to marketing. So that's pretty much what we do. We do pretty much everything for any size in the industry.
What a fun, fun space, Jay. And how did you end up there? How long have you been with Chant?
I've been with the company for about 8 years.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Very cool. And were you always on the marketing side of it? Or did you work elsewhere within the company? Or?
Well, actually, when I joined the company, I joined as the VP of Sales and Marketing. So with Chance, I've been part of the marketing team. My previous experience also was involved with the marketing side.
Yeah, very cool. I mean, how do you... On the one end, it feels to me that this must be a very tight niche category to work in. My guess is that if you own an amusement park of a significant size, then you probably know other people that own them as well or that are responsible for managing them, or et cetera. There probably are trade shows or conferences or something. But then, you know, when you mention the roller coaster inside of a mall and whatever, I mean, it is a more diverse category than maybe we immediately think of when we just think of the Disney World. How do you go about marketing in this space? What are your, you know, kind of, how do you think about it?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for that question, first of all, because it is a very unique, let's say, marketing model. We do the traditional marketing because at the end of the day, the buyer is, we are talking B2B, right? Are the owners of those sites or amusement parks or zoos that we do the marketing with. The traditional channels, right? Magazine publications, shows, trade shows, and things like that. However, the purchasing decision is also consider or taking into consideration the final user / the rider. And that's when we gotta go through the, I'm gonna open parentheses and say, the latest and greatest channels, including TikTok, Instagram, all the social media channels, so that when the user is excited about getting on a roller coaster, a carousel, or a train, we do those videos through social media. And traditionally, the buyers from amusement parks or zoos, they are paying attention to what the final rider are posting. Traditionally, they make some attractions their favorites. And they usually hear like, oh, hold on for a second. Who did that ride? Who did that coaster? Who did that train? And at that point is when the marketing that we are doing for the individual has some weight on the buyer who is doing the spending and perhaps doesn't pay attention to the B2B marketing, but it pays a lot of attention to the marketing that we are doing through the B2C.
How do you leverage that word of that bottom-up word of mouth, you know, and amplify it so that it is, do you need to do anything to ensure that it is seen by your eventual buyer of a ride or a train?
Or that is somehow claimed? Is that the question, Jeff? So like there's buzz about this ride, but people may not know that it's built by Chant,
I suppose. Yeah, I guess. Like how do you kind of amplify that and kind of own it a little bit when it isn't, you're not creating it or even encouraging it?
Absolutely. Well, we have been able to actually identify some of the, label them as influencers because they are not. They just happen to be people that they do have a lot of people that they follow them, and they know that whatever they post is good content, and they are part of those groups, right? So once again, they are not influencers. They are just happen to be part of those groups. So we have already identified those individuals, and because a lot of people, they follow them. Then when we see something through our feed or they tag us, then we kind of tag along. And in that way, the people watching that little video, that little mention of Chance, we make sure that it's actually posted through our social channels. And at that point, we kind of use it that way.
And I would suppose that there's, I mean, the some of that could be monitored via social media monitoring somewhat easily, in that people would be, you know, if they're posting a video about having an amazing time on this ride, they're going to say the name of the ride, right? I'm curious. I mean, most people in the category, most of your competitors are in the business of making fun rides too, right? Like, nobody goes to market saying, we make the boring ones. So
my wife would like that theme park. Yeah, yeah. She doesn't like any ride that is experiential.
But, you know, so how do you, I guess, how do you differentiate, or how do you think about differentiating or positioning yourself versus a competitor in that moment?
No, absolutely. And you know what? Something that I have to mention, I must mention this, is that people before me actually created the brand that we have today, created that legacy. So to give a little bit of background, when I joined the company, the name of the company as it is today, Chance, since has been so long part of this industry that everybody in the industry, they know very well who Chance is, what we do, and the level of quality that we deliver to the buyer. So I'm going to say, in general, people, they are fully aware of the quality, and that make us a little bit ahead of the rest of the players, who, by the way, they have been shorter time part of the industry than us. That is something that I'm going to say, the name brings a lot of weight, and we actually use that as part of the question, definitely.
Well, Jay, I really appreciate you bringing that up, because, you know, there are an awful lot of manufacturing marketers that find themselves, I think, in a similar space where they're going to work for a brand that's 100 plus years old, that's been the leader in the category, in some cases invented the category.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be kind of one of those questions that they have, like, well, what do I do now? And so I love that maybe one of the answers to that is harness the word of mouth and the conversation that's happening in your industry about what it is you sell, and the act of harnessing that and claiming it can drive further demand.
Yes, and one example of that, I'm not sure if when you were kids you went to a carnival to your local place where you live, right? One of the iconic pieces or rides that we have built through the years of the company is called Zipper. The Zipper is iconic. Just 2 weeks ago, one of the team members that we have as part of the marketing team, he came to me and said, Jay, you won't believe this. I just identified one TikTok. It has 55 million views. And I said, you got to show it. You got to show that to me. That was 2 days after he saw it. At the time that he showed that to me, it had 85 million. Views. And nowhere you see the name of Chance, but traditionally people making comments, oh, I love that Chance rides. So right, without us mentioning anything, we were like, wow, it really blew my mind.
I get to inherit that level of brand awareness and legacy. You know, it's a bit of a gift, honestly, and a, you know, responsibility.
You are absolutely right. I thank you for bringing that up, that word, because once again, somebody before me built that brand, but it comes with a lot of responsibility. We got to make sure that now, whatever we do, you got to follow, let's say, that legacy. Even when we come with new ideas, let's make sure that we actually keep the legacy off, so that the people, they don't like, what the heck is going on with this company? No, we try to keep the legacy, just implementing new tools. Definitely.
This is a, not to be a downer in the conversation here, Jay, but I'm just trying to, I guess in a former life, I've done crisis management work in the oil and gas space, et cetera. Is that something that factors into your marketing and communications planning? Because I mean, the rides that you're making do have a, you know, I know that you obviously would work to make them incredibly safe, but things do happen. Is there a How strong is that part of your kind of thinking? Just when we're talking about the responsibility to protecting the brand,
yes,
that came immediately to mind, I guess.
Thank you so much for also bringing that topic, because in what we do, you have human beings getting on your attraction, right? So that plays a key role when we do the marketing. When we talk about X or Y product, or even when we do a press release for a new train, a new electric tram or whatever, we make sure that actually our general counsel is going through the wording or the text that we're going to be using, because what you just mentioned, right? Once you have human beings getting on your attraction, that brings a lot of responsibility and also liability, right? So that plays also a role when we do the marketing, in the form of verbal, in the form of through traditional marketing ads, as well as social media and things like that. Absolutely, you are right. It plays a role.
When you were providing some examples of some of the rides and attractions that Chance has manufactured over the years, it sort of struck me, and I don't think that was an exhaustive list by any stretch, but it also struck me, these are massive projects. I don't know kind of the scale of the invoice on a roller coaster or something like this, but I assume it's pretty large. How does that kind of size of the project impact the length of time that you're doing marketing, and how involved is the owner and the others in your customer organization in that process, and how long does it take?
All right. So thanks so much for that. Marketing-wise is something, obviously, like any other companies, we never stop doing marketing, right? And traditionally, we are just creating new content, new graphics. Every time we go to a different show, we attend multiple shows over the year that we have been attending for decades, right? And every year we go, we try to do different graphics, different products, and things like that. Now, I'm going to try to give you an answer in the way I recall the question. How much or how is the ownership involved when we do things like that, right? I believe I'm not sure if I walk you guys through what it has happened in the last few years with the company. We used to be a family-owned business. We are no longer a family-owned business. Now we are part of a private equity group. So when the family was involved, the family was deeply, deeply involved with everything we were doing regarding marketing, including trade shows. Now that we are a part of a private equity group, they are involved, but not as much as the family used to be. Let's say that we have a little bit more of freedom, as long as we keep perfectly defined what the rules are, the legacy, the brand, and things like that. So mention the second portion that you said, that some of them, they are massive projects, right? Yes, you are absolutely right. Some of them, they take up to, for the manufacturing of that equipment, 3 years.
Oh, wow.
Just for the manufacturing, right? Specifically talking about what we call in the industry, the big boys. The big U and the big D. I'm sure you know who I'm talking about, right? From the moment we start talking about a new project to the moment we land a contract, it takes us perhaps 2 years for the sales cycle. From the moment we have that contract to the moment the installation is happening, up to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, let's say that with that specific company, let's say, we do a different kind of marketing with those team members, because although they already bought an attraction from Chance, most likely big organizations, they have people moving through different departments. So we kind of do different marketing. Most of the marketing at that point, it happens face-to-face through different interactions, reflected in the quality of interactions through the project management team. We make sure that the project management team is doing a good job, because at the end of the day, based on that performance, that is going to bring more contract through the same people, different departments. So different marketing. Yeah,
It's interesting that there's some private equity consolidation in the space, or at least you're now owned by private equity. Is I guess, help me understand the growth of the amusement space more broadly, globally. How are you thinking about growth, or what are you seeing in the category more? Is there lots of new stuff being built, or is it a category, an industry that's kind of maturing a little bit?
No. I'm going to say that the continental U.S., somebody could argue that it's already saturated, right? But at the same time, you have seen perhaps a few news here and there that some brands, high IP, they are opening new amusement parks here in the continental U.S. So some people argue this already saturated, and some people argue, no, it is not, because we are opening more, right? And to give you an example of that, Universal, for instance, not sure if you have heard that they are opening a smaller amusement park in Las Vegas, right? Cool. They are opening one in Texas. So not the size of what we know in Florida, just smaller, right? And this is a result of, believe it or not, it's a result of the pandemic. People are spending more money locally. So you have to give the people what they are willing to do, right? So right. This is when it comes to the continental U.S. Now, if we think in terms of global environment or the whole world, we have some specific places where they do have what we call in the industry mega projects. And one of them, and perhaps the top of them, is Saudi. Saudi Arabia, right? They know that the oil is not going to be there forever. So the kingdom is like, well, you know what? We have to become a tourist destination for the entire world. So they are having massive mega projects, building amusement parks all over the country. So that market, the Middle East, is having significant, massive, large projects. And every time I go there for, let's say, meeting of the whole industry, you see people from all over the planet. They are spending a massive amount of money. And obviously, everyone wants to have a little piece of that pipe, right? So giving you answer to your question, I do believe it's a mix. It's a mix of saturated versus completely green field for X or Y area of the world.
I find that fascinating how similar it is to so many other manufacturing enterprises that, you know, would be facing, yes, they're maybe chasing after a couple of big mega projects that they're going to play a part of, but they're also, a good chunk of their growth is coming from, you know, a bit more mature market that has just seen some evolution in how it's growing because of the pandemic. I mean, what you described, if we take roller coasters out of the category, could have been an awful lot of other manufacturers. And I think the hope was listening kind of, in addition to just being, I think, a bit mesmerized by the notion of the amusement category more broadly. I hope they take some tips from that. Just kind of, I don't know, I find that interesting.
It is. Jay, one of the things that I find interesting is we were talking about the B2B to C and that customer and kind of the non-influencer, but people who are kind of posting about this sort of thing. I know that there is kind of a category of super users with, you know, in amusement parks who would know the manufacturers of the rides and probably read about the history of these companies and know, you know, what makes a Chance roller coaster, you know, one of yours versus one of your competitors or something like that. How much are you able to leverage that kind of community to kind of get in there and just be part of that? Are there any people like on your team that are kind of, getting involved in those groups of people who really, really follow amusement rides and roller coasters and things like that?
Yes, we have a couple of, thank you for the question, a couple of team members. One of them is actually, surprisingly, not part of the marketing team. He is part of the technical team. He is part of the mechanical engineering team. He is perhaps the person that I know within the industry with the most acknowledge of the whole industry. He gets on a ride and he tells you pretty much all the specifics of either a train, people mover, roller coaster, wheel. He tells you everything from, and perhaps doesn't have the specific year when that ride was manufactured. It comes with a very close range. This wheel, based on this structure, this specific detail, this was built between 1978 and 1982 because right? So yes, we have a couple of team members that they know, and they are part of industry nerds, right?
These guys are really popular on Reddit, I'm sure.
Exactly. And having someone part of those groups, it helps a lot, definitely. And once again, even the new writers, at some point, their parents, they enjoy a ride on a CP Huntington train from chance, or perhaps a carousel, and somehow they relay the brand with these new industry nerds. So we try to leverage that. Yeah.
I wonder, what's been the are there a marketing approach or a reaction to something you've done that has been the most surprising? Because I feel like in some ways, you know, you've been you're the steward of a very storied brand in the amusement category, and that leadership in the category is well, it's a weight that you have to carry, but it also comes with a lot of benefits. Has there been anything where you can recall off the top of your head that has been the, you know, that just the market reacted in a surprising way, or something didn't quite go as you planned? Just curious.
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to say one of the products that we currently do is the electric CP Huntington train, right? Primarily, we deal with two different segments for that product, right? What we talk about amusement parks, and I'm talking about the big amusement parks, Six Flags, Cedar Entertainment, you know, those are the big boys, right? And then we also work with zoos, aquariums, municipalities, right? If we think in terms of how they see the energy, I do believe it's easy to see that people working for zoos and aquariums, they see clearly the benefit of having an electric train, right? Versus the traditional amusement park where they are still big fans of fossil fuel, oil, right? So
because it has a nostalgia look, like the train looks more classic, I suppose.
Some days I still ask myself, what is exactly what they see with fossil fuel that the electric doesn't provide to them, right? And the only silly comment that I'm going to make, and for your surprise, somebody said the smell. It's like, no, you cannot tell me that the smell makes the experience different. And they said, no, it's the smell that makes that experience real. Oh, okay. Right? So when we did the original marketing campaign for the electric train, we got a big surprise from one side, right? Because one side they were looking for, they were asking for, while the other side, they were like, you guys are moving to electric? Right? So it shocked us that half of the audience, they didn't welcome, let's say, the introduction of new product, right? Has been a little bit more challenging with that part of the group to convince them about the product as it is, right? And we try now to, well, we try to identify what experience they were missing if they were switching to X or Y, right? And now we believe we have an argument to actually say, hey, this is what still you get, right? There are going to be elements that we won't be able to replicate, such as the smell of the engine running, right?
I have to think, though, there's an opportunity here to create something that makes the noise of and the exhaust smell of an old train that you can just sort of install and make it look like it's there. And this is a freebie, Jay. You can take this to the bank. I think that's going to be big. It's like people putting motor sounds on Teslas.
I tell you this. We did that. They do have an audio file playing when they touch the throttle, start doing the choo, 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 like a real train. The whistle is there, but actually when you press the bottom, it plays the file like the regular whistle is there. The only one that, how do you replicate the smell of diesel? At that point, you are actually crossing the line back to where you were, right?
Yeah, exactly. You can't just burn diesel for the
Well, I'm thinking when Jeff said that earlier, I'm like, my goodness, whatever you create that will have the simulated smell of diesel is surely going to be worse for the environment. That's fascinating. Well, Jay, look, I really appreciate this glimpse into this very unique industry. It's been a real pleasure to chat with you on today's show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
It was great to have you on the show.